Hello and welcome, friends, to another edition of Sustainability Now with me, Justin Maugg, right here on your grassroots community radio station, Forward Radio, WFMP LP Louisville. We broadcast from the top of the historic Hayburn Building in downtown Louisville at 106.5 FM, and we broadcast to the world at forwardradio.org. We want you to go to forwardradio.org, too, to become a part of this community radio station. We are here for you. We want your voices behind these microphones, whether you've got an idea for a brand new program that we could do weekly or monthly, or whether you just have a one-time thing you want to do on our Access Hour, or whether you want to be a guest on a show like this, go to forwardradio.org and click on Participate and let us know how you want to get involved. We also rely entirely on your donations. It only takes $20 a day to keep this fantastic community resource broadcasting 24/7, but that $20 is not coming from any grants or any sugar daddies or advertising. It's coming from you and me chipping in every now and then. So go to forwardradio.org and click Donate to become a member of our community and a part of this awesome thing. Well, what we do each week here on Sustainability Now is bring in folks from around the community who are doing the good work of making sustainability happen now in Louisville. How do we do that? We have to pay attention to what's going on economically, socially, and environmentally all at once and try and find solutions that are going to make sense in all three of those realms. And certainly if there's an issue in our city where all of those come together and where we're really falling down, it is around transit and transit planning. So I'm really excited to have two great thinkers about transit in the studio with me. First of all, I got Josh Poe. Hey, Josh, welcome.
Thank you.
Folks are probably familiar with Josh's work. He's a city planner and community organizer, and he has been writing a lot and speaking a lot in our community recently about all kinds of issues, redlining, all kinds of great stuff that we're not going to have time to dive into today. But he also does a lot of work on transit planning. We're going to talk about that. And Jackie Green is back in the studio with me. Hey, Jackie, it's good to have you back.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Jackie, of course, is a activist and perennial independent mayoral candidate who always runs on a sustainability platform. And Jackie has long been critical of the way Louisville does transit and thinks it's a vital issue that doesn't get enough attention. So it's great to have you two here in the studio with me. I just want to start off, man, Josh, what is it like to be a transit planner in a city where only 2% of the people, something like that, use transit?
Yeah. Well, I was a transit planner for 5 years here, and in doing that, you know, I really lived, ate, and slept transit.
Yeah.
And I think the statistic you threw out about the 2% explains why I'm not
a
transit
right?
planner.
Is
it 2%? It's like 2 point something. So
wow.
It's a very small percentage. And like a lot of things in Louisville, you can't really contextualize transit until we really contextualize poverty in Louisville. And we don't talk about poverty in Louisville. We don't talk about the type of poverty that we have in Louisville. So when the Brookings Institution came to Louisville pre-merger, you know, they told Mayor Abramson, who was mayor then, you know, your concentrated poverty for black people is off the charts.
Wow.
It's number two in the country.
Wow.
And we don't think about that a lot when we think about our city, but we have some of the most impoverished census tracts in the country. And just to put that into context, Owsley County in eastern Kentucky, we think of as like poor,
right.
like the height of poverty, right? Median incomes in Owsley County are like $23,000 a year. Poverty rate's 31%. In Russell, the median income's $8,000 a year.
Unbelievable.
Poverty rate's 81%. So we don't really talk about black poverty in this country in a realistic way. So before we can really talk about transit, you've got to contextualize that. So here's what it was like for me being a transit planner, just an example. You're a transit planner, you're armed with tons of knowledge, you're armed with tons of data.
Yeah.
And the type of thing that comes across your desk is just, you know, I've got tons of examples, but I think this is a pretty good example. Coke Filter was a company that was operating at 18th and Hill, had been there for decades. Most of their employees are from the West End. Most of their employees, I think 60% of their employees ride transit. So pre-2008 market crash, Louisville developers are building office parks all over, you know, the Outer Loop and these different areas. So there was an office park that was building. It was called Bluegrass Office Park. Then the market crashes and it's empty. So, you know, post-market crash, things are getting back going. And in Louisville, what happened after the market crash, unlike Cincinnati, Nashville, Indianapolis, you know, whose cities invested in the urban core, and we can talk about gentrification in those areas, you know, for good or ill, They decided to invest in the urban core. Cincinnati invested $50 million in a small urban park. Cincinnati invested in a streetcar. Cincinnati invested in their waterfront. Nashville invested heavily in the urban core. Louisville goes in a different direction and really trying to keep this suburban machine, you know, that's cranking. Yeah. You know, so we're investing in a massive park far outside the city center.
Yep, and that's a great point.
And we're investing in a bridge, in the Bridges project. So they're trying to keep the show on the road. So this, so if you're a transit planner, here's what happens. The city the city incentivizes Coke Filter to move into the empty office park.
Oh, okay.
So you're a transit planner. Here's what comes across your desk. A request to estimate how much it would cost to provide transit now to the office park because the employees that work for Coke Filter now can't get to work.
Oh, my gosh.
Never mind that none of the design of the office park supports transit.
No.
Never mind that that the location of the office park is not supported by the transit system. So there's no forward thinking here. There's no thinking about an urban context. There's no thinking about transit-oriented development. But it's the transit planner's job now to to fix this problem.
To do reactionary.
It's totally reactionary. Mm. And this, and you know, and you can say, well, this is just one example. I can give thousands of examples. Maybe not thousands, but tons of examples. And every transit planner has examples like this. But in Louisville, it's a little more egregious because there really isn't any planning around this.
Right.
And then when you come back with the cost estimates of just how much it would cost to provide service, well, you know, it's unbelievable. You know, you're talking about, you know, the minimal amount of service because you're paying for a union driver now and you're stretching the system. So if you look at transit, Louisville's transit system, the system design, the system network today, and you compare it to, say, the network in 1961, it doesn't look that much different.
Oh, interesting.
You just see extensions where this has been done. Yeah. And always put an office park here. Well, now we extend the route.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, so now we built Riverport. Well, let's extend the Route 19. So that Route 19 on a map is not actually one route. It's really about 20 different routes. But on a map, it's just one line.
Oh, my gosh.
So we've just extended these routes all over the place and provided terrible service. Same thing with Amazon. We built Amazon, so we stretched the system farther. And that's really what the system is. It's been stretched beyond capacity because no one thought about locating business in a way that the design supports. So, you know, our system was designed to bring people to downtown to work, and then you have a few routes that were designed to get domestic workers into places like, you know, Bonnie Castle and those areas. But that's what it's like being a transit planner.
Yeah.
So you're constantly reacting against a system that's not supported by transit.
Right. And Jackie, I know you have always argued against this continual stretching out of the system.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about why you think that's so problematic and what could be better.
It's problematic on several levels. First, let me say something about Josh's calculation of the cost of extending those routes.
Yeah.
The conclusion that the public makes then is that TARC, public transit, doesn't work. It's too expensive.
Right.
It doesn't work.
We got to go with something else.
Yeah. So nobody rides the bus, you know? Only poor people ride the bus.
Yeah.
You know? And no, it doesn't work when we're making those routes as long. The suburbs, the exurbs, are hopelessly car dependent.
Right.
And they're going to stay that way for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Don't bother servicing those.
People don't go to live out there because they want to ride a bus.
No, they don't. No, they don't. They may want their help to be able to get there by bus.
Oh, geez.
And that's corporate help, too.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Those employees that Josh was talking about.
Yeah.
Those employers are setting up shop.
So in a way, it becomes a corporate subsidy for
us corporate subsidy.
To fund this transit system to get workers to them.
At the expense of our public transit system.
Yeah.
So TARC should not be servicing the suburbs and the exurbs. Those far-flung suburbs. It weakens the urban service. And it's the urban service that will have the density required to make public transit blossom and function at full capacity without overstretching it to the snapping point, which is what we're doing today. A second factor is there are no public transit funds coming down the line. We're going to have to work with what we have.
The pie has been baked, and we're only carving it up.
Now we just chop it up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's the pie we're going to have to eat.
Mm.
So how do we make that
work?
How do we make it work?
Actually useful,
And we don't make it work by cutting it into 1,000 little pieces and stretching it out.
trying to serve everybody in
we
the
can't
service
do that.
Area.
Exactly.
Yeah, is maybe you all know, is TARC like federally mandated in any way to serve certain regions, or how are these decisions made about where they're going to serve?
Do you mean in terms of service levels?
How far out it gets stretched?
There's no federal mandate for that. What there is a federal mandate for is under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act that none of their decisions will be discriminatory based on race, color, or national origin. So any service cuts that
none of their decisions negatively impact.
Wow. Create a disparate impact.
So, wow.
So every decision.
They've made decisions that have had a disparate impact.
Well, this is a federal policy. So anytime TARC alters service or alters a fare structure, and if they alter service beyond 25% of the service level, they have to do an impact analysis. And Title VI is a great tool that the public has to hold public entities accountable. Any project, and not just TARC, this is true of KIPTA, Louisville Metro, any project that uses federal funds has to do a Title VI analysis. And we need accountability sessions. We need to really educate the public on this so that the public can then hold our government
accountable.
Yeah, I think
most people don't realize that.
They don't realize it. Yeah. Usually there's a person in every organization that's responsible for this, and it's their job to do the analysis. But the intent of the law is to go beyond the analysis and make sure decisions are being made with this in mind. Hmm. And I would go a little farther in saying that it's a corporate subsidy. I would say that we really provide the illusion of public transit, but the actual system serves corporate partners.
Wow.
So so we have to provide public transit to get the federal dollars, but we're actually serving U of L, Humana, and UPS with that system. So we have to have Route 23, we have to have Route 4, and the majority of our ridership is on those two routes, and 18. Those three routes carry most of the ridership, and the rest of the system is sort of dying because it's serving those corporate partners. We have a route that's hooked in with Route 77, but it's actually its own route that does nothing but go from the Slugger Field parking lot to Humana, and it just serves Humana employees.
Wow.
That's all it does. And yet we're stretched too thin, we lack funding, but we use a lot of our funding to serve corporate partners and to serve downtown tourists at the expense of riders. And to sort of put that into context, it takes 2 hours to get from Shawnee Park to Jefferson Mall. That's a two-hour bus ride.
Yep.
And I don't think people...
Without transfer.
No, that is a transfer.
Oh, I'm
so
sorry.
You're going from 23, yes, but that's a two-hour bus ride. So, so we could leave here in a car, be in Cincinnati, and have lunch before someone can get to Shawnee Park or, from Shawnee Park to the Outer Loop. So if a person's going to a job, that's 4 hours a day.
Yeah, that's
And we don't really think about the people that depend on transit, what their lives are actually like. And transit's we treat it differently than other public infrastructure because of who uses it. So if LG&E were shut down for a week, everybody would know it and there would be an outrage, right? Or another public infrastructure that
everyone
uses.
Sewers went down and everyone would be on it, right?
So transit gets treated differently for that reason.
Hmm. It's unfortunate that we are couching the discussion in large part around poverty and saying only the poor ride the bus.
Because it shouldn't be that way.
It should not be that way. It should not be that way.
And it's not that way in a lot of cities.
Mm-hmm. Josh referenced the Brookings Institute. They came back to town some years later and conducted another big study. And the leader of that in the wrap-up session as they left town told us under no uncertain terms, Louisville must make it possible for citizens to live without a car.
Wow.
That was 12 years ago?
That was not taken to heart.
That was not taken to heart. We paid that group good money to tell us things that we don't want to hear.
Nobody wanted to hear.
Exactly.
And because there's such an anti-transit interest here, and even within transit planning, this idea of poor people, there's terminology in transit where transit planners refer to poor people as captive riders.
Yeah.
And then choice riders are people that have a car but choose. And we need to really get rid of that terminology. Even the racialized mindset, the white supremacist ideology around a quote-unquote captive rider is very problematic.
Yep.
So we need to try to eliminate that mindset and just create great infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things others, hopefully this will happen with the comprehensive operational analysis. But we don't have transit infrastructure in the suburbs. We don't have transfer stations. We don't have great infrastructure in terms trying to get even a bus bench or a shelter becomes a political issue because of the stigma around transit, and we're thinking about it the wrong way. And then when we do give over public space for a dedicated lane, we give it to a bike lane.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I'm against bike lanes, but we have to prioritize how much return on an investment we would get in a bus lane that everyone can use, that people can use to get to work, that people can use to take their kids to daycare, versus a bike lane. And we really need to think about who that's for. We're prioritizing the needs of a smaller group in the public realm, and we still don't have a dedicated bus lane in the city.
2% use the bus in Louisville. What percentage bike?
To work?
Yeah.
I don't have this in the census, but I can't remember what that is. It's a smaller percentage than use the bus. But.
Okay.
But Josh is very much on target there. I own a bicycle shop.
You're a little invested in this issue. Yeah.
I'm very invested, but I would much rather have dedicated bus lanes than bike lanes. We do bike lanes all wrong. It's terrible in the city. That's another topic for another day.
Mm-hmm.
But let's stick to the buses. We do need that dedicated bus lane. Josh referenced a dedicated bus lane. Take a look at that Dixie Highway.
Yeah,
bus
I wanted
rapid
to ask
transit.
About that. Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, yeah.
So that route is too long. It is serviced by too few buses. It has no dedicated bus lane. The buses are not at bus rapid transit BRT standard, and the bus stops do not meet BRT standards. That is a system designed to disappoint. The city's building up expectations for the Dixie Highway BRT.
Has it launched yet, or what stage is it at?
It hasn't launched
yet. It hasn't launched yet.
It's still under construction.
Okay. Mm-hmm. My guests today here on Sustainability Now are Jackie Green, a perennial independent mayoral candidate, owner of a local bike shop, a sustainability advocate, and Josh Poe, a city planner and community organizer. We're talking about transit and transit planning today. Let's talk a little bit more about the Dixie Highway Bus Rapid Transit. I think folks in Louisville probably aren't even familiar with what a good functioning bus rapid transit looks like. So first of all, let's lay the groundwork. What would it look like if it was done right?
Well, the key to great transit is frequency.
Right.
And it doesn't really matter if it's rail. I mean, I could care less if it's on tracks or if it's on tires. If it's frequent, I'm going to ride it. And
okay,
that's the key to great transit. I mean,
where you don't even need a schedule. You
don't need a
up.
Schedule. You can plan your day around it being there.
Reliable.
And so I'm a big fan of Denver system. And Denver has sort of a feeder system in the downtown. Then they have the circulator that runs around downtown, and I think it's every 3 minutes.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter when you get there. It's going to be there. So we didn't really improve the frequency with Dixie Highway, and we're calling it BRT. Jackie has called it, was it BRT Light?
BRT
Light. I wouldn't even call it that. I would call it a decent bus route. Because we've just improved infrastructure and we've sped the bus up a little bit. But over the course of the route, I've looked at the schedule, I think you're only – so you're getting – if you're living way out Dixie Highway, you'll get to downtown about 12 minutes faster.
Wow, that's it.
12 minutes faster is not enough to really get people to ride transit, especially if you're not increasing the frequency that much. So if you're not going to a 10-minute headway –
because you might have to wait a half an hour.
You're still going to have to wait a half an hour, and that's really where you start to – that's where you start to find the tipping point of when people really like to ride transit.
Yeah,
so,
especially – I mean, if you're standing there and the bus isn't coming, you're going to call an Uber or something.
But this is what happens when you get things wrong. And Louisville so oftentimes get things wrong, and we'll do something for the first time. So we'll do pervious pavement, but it'll be done wrong. So then developers say, yeah, somebody did that, and it didn't work. Yeah. Or we'll swales on Melwood, to catch stormwater. They did those all wrong, and you haven't seen anyone really do swales, and street bioswales since then because they got it wrong. So we've got to start getting things right so that we can create a pattern in our city to replicate these things.
Yeah.
And I worry that's what's going to happen with BRT, is that people are going to say, yeah, they did the BRT on Dixie Highway and I wasn't that impressed with it, because it's not actually BRT. So we're selling people an illusion. And the public just kind of loses faith and then loses trust in the leaders in making these kind of decisions.
So how would you get a bus down Dixie Highway in a frequent, reliable, fast way? What does that look like?
Well, you dedicate a lane.
Dedicated lane.
We're not lacking in street widths.
Yeah,
if it's
exactly.
One thing we have, it is wide streets. So.
And that dedicated bus lane also does something very positive, which is it slows down the rest of the traffic.
And the unpredictability of the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's a very positive thing. We're in this mindset of faster is better.
For the bus, maybe, but...
Yeah, and you do see... So that's why rail works so around the country. People get on rail, and they're passing cars.
Yeah.
They're moving
in
fast.
In Chicago, that feels so good.
Yeah, but it's not really about the mode. It's about the speed, and it's about the frequency. You can do the same thing with BRT, but it has to be done right. we missed a great opportunity in the Bridges Project.
Yeah, let's talk about the Bridges.
So in the Bridges Project, in the Record of Decision, and this is before I moved here, I think Jackie was probably a part of the faction that advocated for this. You know, transit advocates got it inserted that there would be enhanced bus service as part of that project. Federal, it was a mandate. However, in the follow-up to that conversation, the Bridges Project came back and said, so everyone, let me back up, everyone assumed that enhanced bus service meant a dedicated bus lane. They assumed that it meant service, right? Or HOV lane, or something that provided transit service on those bridges. The Bridges Project came to TARC and said, oh no, we don't mean service. You can only, so I think it was $20 million. You can only use that $20 million for capital investment. It cannot be spent on operating expenses.
Oh my gosh.
And that changed, the game.
So they bought some zero buses.
They didn't even buy zero buses. It came from a different grant. They bought some billboards. Most of it was spent on a marketing. Most of it was spent on a marketing campaign. And then some of it was spent on commuter buses. So this is what happened. So it was decided that the Bridges Project created, you had to do an environmental justice analysis. And it was decided that the Bridges Project would have a negative impact on environmental justice communities. So this is sort of how it works at the federal level and at the level of the Bridges Project. So here they are setting. They have to do enhanced bus service. They have to do this EJ component. They don't really know what to do.
And they don't really want to do anything.
They don't really want to do it. They don't really understand how to do it. So let's just wrap all those together.
Uh-huh.
And so what they said was, we'll build some park and rides and we'll buy some commuter buses and you can just use the rest on marketing.
Oh,
that's how the $20 million got spent.
Wow.
And we don't follow up with these things to really hold people accountable, but that story really needs to be part of the public narrative of the disaster that the Bridges Project now is.
Yeah, and what the public doesn't understand is that we brought up in a public meeting that there is no public transit option in this whole discussion of the Ohio River Bridges Project. And I said, you've excluded public transit from the discussion. And the head of the Ohio River Bridges Project said, no, we didn't exclude it. We just didn't include it. And I ended up telling the gentleman that I'm not linguistically challenged. If it's not included, it has been excluded. At which point, their attorney stood up and he said, Jackie's right. Let's address this later. And so they made the decision to come up with a public transit option, and they did so. But the system that they designed was designed to fail in order to be able to pass what they wanted off to the public.
Yeah, it works for what they wanted, right?
it was perfect for their
private cars and trucks.
Yeah. So, you know, the point now is that we have to redesign the system. And it's a system design problem.
The transit system or our roadways?
The transit system.
Okay.
The transit network.
The whole transportation system.
The whole, but specifically what's happening now is with the new TARC fare structure is that TARC actually has data for the first time.
That's right.
And I don't think anybody realizes that TARC has been operating in a data vacuum for decades.
Yeah.
They haven't had ridership data, and they haven't had schedule data. So they haven't been able to do a schedule audit. So typically the way that works is you take a transit route, and you look at all the data of how long it takes to get from A to B, and then you average that out, and you base your speeds on that. So if you don't have data, somebody actually goes out and drives that route, and they're basing their schedules off observational inputs.
Yeah.
So you're not working with raw data. So there are opportunities now, and it's long overdue, to actually make data-informed decisions, design a network. So what happens is transfers are not built into the TARC system currently, and they never
have
been.
That's crazy. That's why people get stuck.
That's why people don't get stuck. So it's really so all the burden of operational efficiency is really put on the drivers because the design doesn't support efficiency and the schedule doesn't support efficiency. So the drivers are basically carrying the load of the transit system, and God bless them, you know. But they shouldn't have the burden. Shouldn't fall at the bottom. It should be supported from the top down.
Hmm.
So there are opportunities moving forward in the next year or so to redesign a system as good as we can get it. So for example, on Frankfort Avenue, you have three routes, but they're bunched together.
Mm-hmm.
So the three routes come all at once. You know, there's not a headway that's designed to come every 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So with this comprehensive operational analysis, hopefully those things will be taken into consideration and fixed.
Which is sort of the short-term planning that TARC is doing at the same time they're doing long-range planning, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. So they'll finally have some data to look at. So if we're going to fix it, and we know that it's the stretching out to the suburbs and exurbs that's the problem, what area should TARC serve?
Job centers.
But some of those might be out.
Some of those are way out.
How does that
work? Well, I mean, but you can't serve all of them. So you prioritize where the job density is located. and you serve those, but you serve them in a way that's more radial, and you build infrastructure around those so that people can transfer safely and comfortably, so they're not standing in a ditch way out Dixie Highway. And then you base your budget, you base your system on what you're able to serve, and you prioritize an efficient system over, you know, this sort of most bang for your buck ridership problem. And it's not just about generating the most ridership. It's about designing a great system. And if that means taking, you know, catching three buses to get somewhere, then that's a trade-off.
So you job centers, but then that's the one end of this route. Where would you go to get people where they live? You know what I'm saying? Like, which residential areas should be served?
This is part of our problem. Our land use is totally messed up. We've spread ourselves out farther and farther. We've neglected to honor density that works for a city. What I would propose is that TARC look at maybe a 6 mile, a 7 mile radius from downtown and service that 7 mile radius in all directions. Indiana,
so like within
side,
the Watterson, within the Watterson,
roughly. Yeah, but service that very well. Service it extremely well. Turn our one-way streets to two-way streets. Give those buses a dedicated bus lane. Give them a right-of-way at the intersection so they can go on through.
So rather signaling than issues. Solving signaling, the
signaling issue.
Yeah.
Establish a bus depot downtown. And that would be, you don't have to build anything. You just have to establish a block, a city block, one of them, as the bus depot, and have all your routes that go downtown go through one of the four streets that border that block.
So you can catch everything from
one. So you know you can get on a bus, it'll drop you off at the bus depot, and at the bus depot, somewhere on the block, you can get any other bus and go anywhere you need to. We do not have a centralized bus station.
We don't have and we're the only city that has used electric buses that did not build the infrastructure to support a bus station. So every other city, when they get electric buses, we put ours on the street.
Yeah.
They put the charging stations within a transit center.
Yeah. Makes
and we have
sense.
So many vacant parcels downtown, there's a great spot on the east end of downtown that would make a great bus depot. And then you could do what Denver did and have a circulator that just runs every 3 to 5 minutes. So you go, and that allows the buses that come downtown to get out of downtown quickly while the circulator gets people around downtown. Yeah.
Josh, it sounds like you're thinking of a bus station.
Basically a transfer center,
a transfer station.
I'm thinking of a transfer center just established by calling it that and having the buses.
I see what you're saying.
There's no capital needing to be expended to build what I have in mind.
Well, if the service was frequent enough and you didn't have to stand in the rain for 30 minutes, you know, then that would work.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a place to buy smart cards.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
a little kiosk on the corner for the TARC. Yeah. But other than that, you know, private businesses, there'd be coffee houses around that area.
Oh,
there'd
be
bookstore.
It would
that
drive
would be
development.
A thriving
These things incentivize development
time. Yeah. It would. I'd also turn off the traffic signals at our urban intersections. The bus has the right-of-way. Everybody else approaches that intersection slowly, carefully, and the bus has the right-of-way. That would really slow down, that would calm urban traffic.
We need that.
And, this is an urban concept.
And all these ideas have worked elsewhere, and the notion of having service inside the Watterson only, I think, needs to be taken under serious consideration. It has to be an option on the table. And I just want to reiterate what Jackie says, because people ask me all the time if there's one thing you could do. Everybody's hooked on this one thing idea. And what I've been saying is, if I could only do one thing, and we need to get out of that thinking that there's one thing.
Right.
But if there was, I think if I could do one thing today to improve Louisville transit, and not just transit, but economic development and health, it would be the one-way streets issue.
Yeah,
We need to really think about why these streets were made one-way, where
to
we have one-way streets,
town, quick.
And convert those. And the city's working on that to their credit. And a lot of that work is due to Chris Glasser and the work that he's done.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, Bicycling for Louisville, a community partner of us here at Forward Radio. You're listening to 106.5 FM or forwardradio.org. My name is Justin Mogg, and this is Sustainability Now. I'm really excited by our conversation today about good transit planning and how we can make transit work for Louisville with Josh Poe, a city planner and community organizer, and Jackie Green, our perennial independent mayoral candidate and bike shop owner, always running on a sustainability platform, always thinking about how to make this a better place. Let's talk about Move Louisville. This was a big community process. There were so many public meetings about Move Louisville. How are we going to redesign our transportation system? What's the bottom line? What was the bottom line of that?
Well, the bottom line was that when the consultants landed at the airport, the city met them there and they told them they could not talk about rail transit. and they could not talk about 8664, and they made sure to tell them that at the airport.
Remind folks what 8664 was.
8664 was the plan that we would remove the interstate highway from the waterfront and build a surface level street on the waterfront. And I just say that to say that's how it started.
Yeah.
So in the very beginning, from the time the consultants landed, there was concern about what would not be proposed.
Yeah.
Rather than this forward-thinking, visionary strategy to improve our city.
Yeah. And what about rail, Jackie? You wanted to talk about how the light rail proposal was circuitous in trying to serve the airport.
It was. Let me say one thing about a couple of things about rail before we talk the T2, Transportation Tomorrow, the light rail system that is somewhere on some shelf.
Some drawing board
here
somewhere.
In town. Every weekend, we sabotage TARC routes with street events.
Yeah, that's true.
It's very true. If we had
that season is approaching rapidly. Barricades out here
they're
on Broadway
there,
right now.
They're
today.
Already there. And a rail system, although I agree wholeheartedly with Josh in that I don't care whether it's rail or whether it's rubber tire, it needs to be frequent. But a rail system is unalterable. You cannot change the route of the rail like you can reroute buses.
That's a good
point. It has that going for it long term. T2. Transportation Tomorrow was this is back when we were looking at the Ohio River Bridges project. There was the Ohio River Bridges project and there was T2. Simultaneously, they were considering these two transportation projects. And T2 was a light rail system going from downtown down toward U of L, out to the airport, to the fairground.
This would run down like down 4th Street and
more or less
be like a trolley kind of.
The problem with it was that a good rail system, a good transit system, goes out a straight line and back rather than meander around through streets. And the light rail had these two bulges in the route, one which went out to the fairgrounds and then another which went out to the airport and then it straightened back out again.
Yeah.
The airport's major source of income is parking. Think about that now.
Yeah, that's an important fact.
That is their dollars rule. Their biggest source of income is parking. How supportive is the airport going to be of light rail?
Yeah.
They're not going to be.
Yeah.
Consider all the parking lots around the fairgrounds and how much it costs to park. That is also a very significant portion of their income. They too are not going to support light rail. So
why go there at all?
Why? Yeah. Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Design it so it moves quickly, frequently, efficiently.
If you're going to implement rail, you know, there are disadvantages to it being unalterable, but the advantage to that is you have really stable economic development. So when you see cities like Minneapolis, you have some retailers that don't come out of the mall typically. They just stay in the mall because that's where people access. So like Apple, North Face. But when you put rail transit in, it's good. You have Apple and North Face on the street again, and you see that all over the country.
Yeah.
And I never understood T2. T2 was kind of reminiscent of this type of 90s rail planning where you want to connect downtown to the airport, and we're sort of fascinated in Louisville with handing over public infrastructure and funding to tourists. You know, that's what the circulators
that's right,
are.
That's right.
You know, we've got a budget crisis right now, but meanwhile we spent, you know, almost $200 million on the Omni Hotel that we're supposed to get this great return on that's yet to materialize. So that's sort of, when I look at T2, I think of like, this is really for tourists.
Thinking.
And Seattle had a light rail plan that was similar to that too, and it didn't work. So a better plan to me would have been down Shelbyville Road. To pick an economic corridor. Shelbyville Road kind of has a natural connection to Market Street, so you connect it to the West End, and then you can take it out to Oxmoor. That would be a more realistic rail route, or Bashford Manor down Broadway, where you have these sort of connectors of residential transects to, and it becomes an economic development engine. And then you build stations around it that you can design the rest of the transit system to connect to. I didn't see T2 as connecting to the system at all. It was a very separate sort of proposal.
And it was spending an inordinate amount of public funding on servicing upper class.
Yeah.
Airport users.
So what do we do going forward? We've got these really horrible development patterns in Louisville that are sort of a root cause of the problem. How do you gentlemen propose we fix that?
Well, this is sort of the answer I've been giving in a lot of different areas. We need better policies, but before we can get to better policies, we need organizing. So when I think about the cities that are, the great things are happening. Great things are happening in Chicago right now. Great things are happening in Oakland. And it's not because the governments or the corporate interests in those cities decided to do something
great.
We're
leading the way, yeah.
It's because grassroots work is being done centered around justice.
Yeah.
And from there, it's grown. And the campaigns have been so strategic and been so they've been so successful that they've been able to make demands. Mm-hmm. And the demand, they've been able to make policy demands. And I think that's what we need here. I think we need a bus riders union. I think that would go a long way of shifting the power dynamics, because we keep thinking, well, TARC is going to fix this, or Metro's going to fix this, or some nonprofit's going to fix this, and they're not.
Yeah.
And this idea that it's going to trickle down somehow is wrongheaded. And what we need to organize.
Or that some master planning Move Louisville thing is going to fix it.
Yeah, and it's not. So we need to really get. And it's difficult. Organizing is hard work. Campaigns are hard work.
Yeah.
But it's necessary. But it's really hard if only three people are doing it. So we've got to get more people.
How do you get the numbers with such a small ridership?
Well, the ridership is not, so it's not small. You know, I mean, TARC says they have 5,500 people riding a day. That's not accurate. They have 5,500 boardings a day.
Yeah.
So the American Public Transit Association estimates that, if you have 30% of your boardings is your rider. So 30% of whatever 5,500 is, that's how many people ride. That's roughly how many people actually. That's a lot of people still. And, you know, keep in mind, you know, when we say 2% ridership, that's 2% of Jefferson County.
Yeah.
If we look at the urban service area, the old city limits, it's a lot more people than you think. So the ridership inside that is much higher than 2%. All of our data has been skewed by merger. But we need to organize those folks. And there are a lot more people that ride transit, you know, when they need to take their car to the garage. We've been a one car family for a while. I've gone back and forth to only riding transit and then having a car but still choosing to ride transit. And there are a lot of families like that. So it's not an all or nothing.
Right.
But those people, there are people who want to ride transit. I don't ride it right now because I just can't. You know, I have certain trips in the day that just don't work with transit. But if I could, I would. So they could join a bus riders association and get involved and help push for it.
You're asking a chicken and egg question here, because the public transit is tied intimately to land use. Density serves public transit. Public transit serves density. So what do we do? How do we change it? What should we invest in, public transit or the density? I would invest, and this is a small I invest. It costs very little to turn your streets from one way to two way.
Yep.
Very little to shorten the bus routes. Very little to establish a dedicated bus lane. That's some paint on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Very little to turn the urban traffic signals off. Very little to establish a bus depot one block downtown as the bus depot. Very little to give those buses the right-of-way at intersection. None of that costs a lot, and it can be executed quickly from the top down. What's the result of that? So that drastically changes your public transit and also your private transit system, because there's less road available for cars. And they're going slowly, and they don't have the dedicated bus lane, and they have to approach every intersection very slowly, very carefully. The result of that will be people will flee their cars, leave the cars at Oxmoor, at the parking lot, get on the bus, and bring it in town.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. By choice. We were talking about the captives and the choice riders.
Yeah.
By choice, they will abandon their cars 6 miles out and get on the bus. So now, what is my neighbor downtown who has a surface parking lot doing?
Yeah.
He's looking around 2 days into this program, or 2 weeks into the program, and he's wondering where his customers are.
Yeah.
And he said, well, you know, I can't make a living now selling parking spots. Maybe I need to redevelop.
Yeah.
So investment in redevelopment of surface parking lots as commerce and in residences above that begins to quicken.
Yeah.
And we have changed the land use of the whole region.
And that's so important to think about. There's a group called Urban 3 down in North Carolina, and they actually do these maps that show the return you get on investment when you make these type of investments in the urban core. And they do these great visuals. And what it shows is when you make investment in the suburbs, you get very little return. It's a very expensive investment, but every investment you make in the urban core, you get a huge return. And it can be very minor, like what Jackie's talking about, two-way streets, signal prioritization, because those returns are so much more impactful.
Yeah.
And the suburbs is the exact opposite of that. It really impacts no one. And it just keeps perpetuating that exponential growth model that keeps stretching the services farther and farther out, which puts more pressure on
not
the services.
Not just transit, but all the other utilities.
All the services, the utilities.
Everything else.
Yeah.
Justin, you've probably seen the video, San Francisco, 1906 Market Street.
I have
you can
seen
Google
that,
folks.
It's
San Francisco,
so amazing
Market
to look
Street,
at that
1906. There's a video. It's probably 15 minutes long.
It's enchanting.
It's enthralling. It's what you see is rails.
Yeah.
Horses pulling rail trolleys.
Yep.
You see horses pulling wagons. You see
bicycles.
You see cars.
Kids
you
playing.
You see pedestrians.
Commerce.
And
everywhere.
There is just, it looks like chaos.
Yeah.
But it's flowing.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to realize about our cities. We're living in an experiment. We had perfected how to build cities before World War II. Going back to Rome, you know, and Galileo and people, we had perfected street widths. We had perfected building heights. We knew how to build cities. We got it right.
And they were designed for people.
Yeah. And they were designed for people. And then once we take, you know, so we went through some hiccups with industrialism and with having factories next to residences. But after World War II, we're living in an experiment.
Yeah, we are.
And then we have to think about it like that. And we're not getting good outcomes. We're not getting good economic outcomes. We're getting terrible health outcomes. We had density. We had diversity.
Yeah.
You know, Langston Hughes talks about growing up in Cleveland, grew up in a very diverse neighborhood. All of our neighborhoods were diverse. And we have to think about, there was some intentionality behind the suburbs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, racism was serviceable to capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
These things were all very serviceable to capitalism, but this experiment has not worked. So city planning is simple. You study the past and you replicate what worked. It's a lot like farming. The old ways were the best ways.
Right.
You just need to make sure it's done with an equity lens and a justice lens. But these things work because, you know, they worked before.
Oh, that's
and you look at those old main streets.
Yeah.
You know, those were not designed by urban designers. They were not designed by the greatest architects in the country. They were designed by regular builders who lived in every town. Because they were working from a pattern that had been perfected.
Yeah.
And there were no stripes on the street.
Right,
there were no
right.
street lights. There were no signs. It was community and people worked together.
Working it out together.
Interestingly enough, though, watch the video. Watch the role the cars play.
Mm.
They're moving faster than everyone else. They're making erratic turns.
Yeah.
And you can see it coming.
Yep. We gotta get on this or it's going to be chaos. But well, we are all out of time, my friends. In the last minute, if our listeners are fired up about these issues, what would you recommend they do?
Get involved in this long-range plan. Go to the meetings. Very few people are showing up at the TARC meetings.
Yep.
Go to the meetings. Even if you don't ride transit, bring your neighbors to the meeting and just get involved. Ask questions. Push the envelope.
Excellent point.
Another thing you can do, there's a group of citizens who for the past 3 months has been going to the mayor's office on the 22nd
of every month.
Of every month, 22nd, because the 22nd of April is Earth Day. So we're saying this is the mayor's Earth Day every month. And we go to his office.
At noon or?
At noon.
Okay. So March 22nd?
March 22nd is the next. If the 22nd falls on the weekend, then it's the Friday before.
Okay.
Get involved with that group.
Excellent.
Because we are addressing some of these very issues, plus renewable energy.
Cool. Well, I wish we had more time to talk. Jackie Green, Josh Poe, thank you guys so much for taking the time
today.
Thank you.
I think this was really enlightening. Stay tuned, my friends. Our community action calendar coming up in just a minute. Lots of ways to get involved to make that sustainability now here in Louisville. with the sweet sounds of Appalachian behind me now, and many thanks to them for giving us permission to use their great local music on the podcast SoundCloud edition of our local programs here on Forward Radio. You can learn more about them at appalachian.com. My name is Justin Mogg. This is the time on Sustainability Now where we get you engaged in radioactive efforts to make sustainability a reality now in our community. And just touching on the thing that was mentioned during our interview, if you want to learn more about and comment on TARC's own ongoing short and long-term planning process, you can learn more about it at ridetarc.org under About Us. The thing to search for is LINC, TARC link. That'll give you some more information about the planning process and contact information to have your voice heard on that one. But let's turn to our calendars. Get your pencil sharpened. Get ready to get active, my friends. It all starts Tuesday evening, March 12th, with a great screening of Farmers for America. The average age of the U.S. farmer today, my friends, is 60. The average farmer is 60 in America. Half of America's farmland is going to change hands in the next 12 years. This is the story of young people stepping up. Join Slow Food Bluegrass for a screening of the film Farmers for America, a documentary about the future of farming, Tuesday evening, March 12th, 5 p.m. at Gravely Brewing, 514 Baxter Avenue. Following the movie, they'll be hosting a Q&A with a panel of farmers and other allies. The doors open at 5. The movie begins at 6. You can grab dinner at the delicious Mayan Street Food, and sponsored by Slow Food Bluegrass, Louisville Farm to Table, Community Farm Alliance, Edible Louisville, and The Local Life. There is a $5 suggested donation. More information is at slowfoodbluegrass.org, or come on out Tuesday, March 12th at 5 p.m. at Gravely Brewing for this film and Q&A. Also on Tuesday evening, it's the start. It is the season to start growing, my friends. So it's the start of Jefferson County Extension's free gardening classes. They're going to happen again this year every second Tuesday evening, 6:30 p.m. at the Bonair Library, and every fourth Tuesday, also at 6:30, out at the Middletown Library. So coming up this Tuesday, March 12th at 6:30, it's Starting Seeds Indoors at the Bonair Air Library, 2816 Del Rio Place, and that program will repeat out at the Middletown Library on the fourth Tuesday, March 26th at 6:30. You can get more information about these and all the upcoming gardening classes, again, every month, free at our libraries at facebook.com/JeffersonCoExtension, all one word, Jefferson Co. Extension on Facebook. Also coming up Tuesday evening, if neither of those float your boat, well, coming out for Immigration Stories of Status at the Maine Library on York Street. It's at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday the 12th. Immigrants, migrants, refugees, asylum seekers, job seekers. What's the difference in these legal statuses and why? Stephen George of Louisville Public Media will moderate a panel of experts and newcomers to unpack the complicated realities of immigration in America. Panelists and storytellers include Rebecca Sim from Catholic Charities of Louisville, Mark Martinez from Martinez Immigration Law, Barbara Menefee from Dinsmore and Stoll, another lawyer, Ahmed Hussein, Agnes Kovics, and Karina Barialis. This is a hashtag Be Golden event presented by Catholic Charities of Louisville and Louisville Public Media, and it's part of Lean Into Louisville, a new metro-wide program that centers on conversations and presentations exploring and confronting the history and legacy of discrimination and inequality in our city and our country. So that's Tuesday, 6:30 at the Maine Library on York Street. Absolutely free. Coming up Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m., March 13th, you can get trees, my friends. Yes, it is the time of year to plant trees for the future. And Louisville Grows has a goal of getting 1,000 trees planted this season. And you can help out on Wednesday by adopting a free tree or two, three of your own at this free tree giveaway, March 13th at Mount Olive Missionary Baptist Church. That's on 443 East Kentucky Street, 4 to 6 p.m. or until all trees are gone, because it's first come, first served. These are not one-year-old trees. These are trees that are 5 to 10 feet tall, native species only. They are not ornamental. And tree care and species information will be provided. This is a Louisville Grows project, and you can get more information. And if you have any questions, email trees@louisvillegrows.org or come on out Wednesday at 4 to 6 p.m. at the Mount Olive Missionary Baptist Church, 443 East Kentucky Street, and get yourself some free trees and get them in the ground, my friends. Also coming up on Thursday, March 14th at 5:30, it's the Phoenix Hill Neighborhood Association inviting you out to Know Your Neighborhood. Join us for an evening with historian Dr. Tom Owen for a look into the past of the historic Phoenix Hill neighborhood and perhaps what it can inform us about a better tomorrow. On Thursday, March 14th, 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Prohibition Craft Spirits, 436 Baxter Avenue, coming out for this free event. Also coming up on Thursday evening, if that doesn't float your boat, then Louisville Grows has a great film series, monthly film series at their Healthy House, 1641 Portland Avenue. Doors open at 5:30. The film starts at 6, and there's a great panel discussion after each film. This series is designed to promote discussion and mindfulness towards all kinds of things: healthy living, healthy eating, environmental education, social justice. And it's every second Thursday of the month through August. You can check out more at louisvillegrows.org. This month, Thursday, March 14th, the film is called Urban Roots. It's a story that reveals the best in us can prevail in the most difficult of times. And in the most difficult of places, new hope emerges. This growing movement of urban farmers is changing the way people think about food and life in Detroit. It is a fantastic film, really uplifting film. I saw it myself, about the urban agriculture movement in this depopulating and depopulated city with lots of vacant and abandoned properties. Sounds a little familiar to our downtown core here in Louisville. We'll come on out on Thursday evening for this 6 p.m. film at the Healthy House, 1641 Portland Avenue. There'll be free Ale 8 because it's sponsored by them, and the guest panelists will be my own wife, Amanda Fuller, is going to be there, founder of the Lots of Food Urban Farm that is right next door to the Healthy House, and Stephen Lewis, Jefferson County Extension agent, two great panelists talking about how we can turn these lessons from Detroit into realities here in Louisville. Now this weekend, Saturday, March 16th, it's another opportunity to get yourself some great trees and get them in the ground. It's a tree giveaway out at the Louisville Zoo from 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturday, March 16th. The Louisville Zoo, of course, is at 1100 Trevilian Way. These are all Kentucky native trees. They are awarded on a first-come, first-served basis, but you have a limit of 5 trees per Louisville resident. You must be a Jefferson County resident with proof of residency, so bring your driver's license, ID, or utility bill. Trees cannot be planted in street, rights of way, parks, or containers. They must be planted in Jefferson County, and there will be a species fact sheet, planting, and maintenance instructions provided. If you have any questions, you can contact the Louisville Metro Division of Community Forestry, 502-574-3927, or communityforestry@louisvilleky.gov. And of course, there's more information online at louisvilleky.gov about this free tree giveaway at the Louisville Zoo on Saturday the 16th, 9 to 11 a.m. Also coming up Saturday, March 16th, Be the Change voter registration and ballot demonstration. Make your voice heard and register to vote, and you can also meet your representatives. This is taking place at Victory Park Saturday the 16th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can meet your representatives. State Representative Attica Scott will be there, along with Charles Booker and Louisville Metro Council President David James. This is hosted by the Olmsted Parks Conservancy and Norman Parker. Special thanks to Kentuckians for the Commonwealth and Friends of Victory Park for helping out with this event. It all takes place on Saturday the 16th, 11 to 2 p.m. in Victory Park at 22nd and Kentucky. Also Saturday, just a few blocks away, you're invited for Better Block Louisville 2019 in the Parkland neighborhood. They're having a community meeting on Saturday the 16th from 1 to 3 p.m. So yes, you can do both things. You can meet your legislators, register to vote, and then come on over to the Calvary Baptist Church there at 1368 South 28th Street for this community meeting to build a better block. Design a better block with your neighbors. They'll be focusing on the block of 28th in Dumanil, and they will build the community vision together in June 2019. So come on out for the planning, and then in June, we'll actually build it together. This is hosted by the Center for Neighborhoods. You can learn more at centerforneighborhoods.org or give them a call at 502-589-0343. Coming up on Sunday, March 17th, you can come explore earth-friendly habitats for congregations at the Passionist Earth and Spirit Center, 1924 Newburgh Road. This is put on by Kentucky Interfaith Power and Light and the Passionist Earth and Spirit Center. It's a tour of the center on Sunday, March 17th, from 2 to 4 p.m. You can see firsthand many ideas for creating habitats at your own house of worship. Features you will see include a food forest, rain garden, bug hotel, wetlands, pollinator gardens, composting, and even a refugee garden. So come on out. It's free Sunday, March 17th, 2 to 4 p.m. out on Newburgh Road at the Passionist Earth and Spirit Center. A couple things to note for next Monday, March 18th, nature-based learning. Why are children need it now? It's taking place at the Louisville Nature Center near the zoo, 3745 Illinois Avenue, at 7 p.m. on Monday the 18th. Dr. Jean Lomino, a former classroom teacher and nature center director and co-founder of the Wauhatchie School, the first forest kindergarten in Tennessee, will discuss the growth of forest kindergartens and nature preschools in the U.S. and the importance of nature-based learning for children's healthy development. Dr. Lomino is also working to bring nature immersion experiences to children in other educational settings, including public schools and childcare. Dr. Lomino will also share her soon-to-be-published research into character development in forest kindergarten. This is co-hosted by the Children at Play Network. It is free and open to the public on Monday, March 18th at 7 p.m. at the Louisville Nature Center. Also, Monday evening, March 18th at 6 p.m. at the Louisville Free Public Library on York Street, it's the next in the Clearing the Air Community Workshop series from the Air Pollution Control District. They're going to be talking on March 18th about the Air Pollution Control District 101, what it is that they do to help clear the air, how it all works, how they monitor, and how they enforce. These workshop sessions are every month, 6 to 7:30 p.m. in the main public library. March 18th is APCD 101, and April 15th will be Air Quality and Your Health, and so it goes through November. For updates, check louisvilleky.gov/APCD. You can call 502-574-6000, or you can follow them on Twitter at LouAPCD. And that's all the time we have for today here on Sustainability Now. Stay tuned, my friends. Lots of great stuff coming up on 106.5, and I will be back in your ears in 1 week's time. Alegría.